Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight, or today, depending on when you're listening, is David Chartier. Did I pronounce your last name right?
Yes, you got it. Thank you very much.
I've known you forever in internet years, so I had it in my head of a particular way to pronounce your name, and I'm glad it's the right way to pronounce your name. David, thank you for joining me. Would you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, thanks a lot for bringing me on, Scott. And I am a freelance content strategist. Basically means like kind of a marketing guy in the 21st century, and a writer. So I work with app shops and developers to, you know, work out a message and talk to their customers and where to find them and things like that. But I also freelance as we got started in this industry together, if we recall. So I freelance for a couple of magazines like Mac Life magazine. And that's kind of how I get through my day.
And that's right. We met through the auspices of the late great Weblogs Inc. and the late great Tuwa, the unofficial Apple weblog. We worked together there for a long time, actually.
Indeed, like 2005?
Something like that. I don't know. We were there pumping out stories about Apple and all the craziness. And now Apple has completely changed. But we're not here to talk about Apple. Although I'm sure we could talk about Apple for 50 minutes. But we're here to talk about something far more important, Star Trek. So since we're here to talk about Star Trek, my first question I ask everyone is, do you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Absolutely. So I was born in 1980. And so when I was growing up, my brother is about 13 years older than me, and he would be watching the show all the time. And I remember stumbling on the original series when I was like way too young to understand it, but I still wanted to watch it because it looked cool and my brother liked it, which means I liked it too. But The Next Generation was kind of like, that's where I hit my stride. Like The Next Generation just totally got me. I wound up, I don't know, do any of your listeners know what a VCR is?
I imagine more than a few know what a VCR is.
It's kind of like a DVR, but it had tape and it was a physical thing, right? I had worked it out to, I got to know when the commercial breaks were coming so well that I could record, I could throw in a certain type of tape that had like extended length, and I'd use a certain type of recording format to record every Next Generation episode on TV, and I could cut out all the commercials by pausing the remote, and I could fit 4 episodes on a single VHS tape.
That takes some dedication and some timing. I'm impressed.
Between that and I had the actual technical manual for the Enterprise D. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that?
I have.
I read through about half of that, I think, in high school. Like I was actually reading it. And for anybody who doesn't know what that is, it's basically a manual for how the Enterprise works, like blueprints and explanation of technology as if it exists. Like it would tell you what dilithium crystals are, where they came from, who invented them, or who found them, you know, how all of this stuff works as if it's not theory or science fiction, like it was a real thing.
How it's to recrystallize cool. them, should you need to. I think I have a copy of that somewhere. I don't know where.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked DS9. I really liked it. Voyager, I wound up getting, I don't know, life kind of took me away, and I wound up not being able to keep on top of it. But I liked Voyager. Enterprise was good. I didn't get to see enough of it as I wanted to, you know, so it's like on my list of TV shows that I need to catch up on, which I don't want to talk about because you'd probably get upset at me.
Now I'm intrigued.
But if I can bring this up just very briefly, what was up with that theme song?
Oh, Enterprise's theme song?
The Enterprise theme song.
It's awful.
Like the Bon Jovi like B band that they found to like write something for him. But anyway, no, I absolutely love Star Trek. We have a Toyota Matrix, and you know those little like Jesus fish things?
Mm-hmm.
We have a Trek fish. So it's like the Enterprise, you know, kind of like made it up to look like the fish, but instead of fins, it's the warp nacelles, and it says Trek on it.
Well, I approve of that. We do not have any Star Trek paraphernalia on our car, mostly because I don't think my wife would approve, but maybe I can convince her. I don't know.
So yeah, I did get clearance on that. That was an agreed upon thing. I didn't have to sneak it in or anything. I was pretty
just
happy.
Wait for her to notice. What is this thing on our car? Now, okay, I think you've established the VCR taping, I believe, establishes your credentials as a Star Trek fan, because that takes dedication, and I'm impressed. I was too lazy to do that, so I did not do that. But I did, of course, now I own all of the Next Generation on Blu-ray. It's very exciting, and obviously...
They'll probably also look a little bit better.
Yeah, tiny bit better, and all they're available on streaming, so, you know, with the... HD upconverted, or however they did it. Remastered. They didn't upconvert. Excuse me. So it looks perfect. And also the original series, which we watched. I always pretend, I don't know why I do this. I pretend as though people who are listening have no idea what episode we're about to talk about. But of course they know what episode we're going to talk about, because I said in last week's episode what it was, and the title of this episode will say what it is. So I don't know why I do this. Mirror Mirror, original series, season 2, episode, what is it? Episode 10, which is crazy. I'm always amazed by the original series and how they pack so many good episodes into this, because this episode, I was looking at my Blu-ray, and before it, I forget what episodes surround it, but some other classic Star Trek episodes surround it in the season. But anyway.
Well, this was also back when seasons could be like 20 or 25 episodes long.
Yes. And you know, when the shows themselves were 50 minutes long, as we were talking about before we started recording.
Yeah, right? Not like 45 or 35 minutes long, because the rest is commercials.
You gotta pay for these things. It was a different time. It was a simpler time in 1967 when they aired this. I got on that because of Blu-rays and VCRing. So let's talk about your favorite. I think I may be able to guess what your favorite Star Trek series is, but I don't want to speak for you. So if you had to pick one... Which would you pick?
I'd definitely go with The Next Generation. That was the one that I grew up on. Like I got it, you know, in late grade school and in high school, and yeah, I had every single episode, you know, on those VHS tapes, and I wore out quite a few of them. So yeah, that's me.
See, that's what I would have guessed, and this continues my crazy theory in which your favorite Star Trek is perhaps not the best Star Trek, but the one that hits you at the right moment and kind of hooks you. Not that there's anything wrong with The Next Generation, and in fact, it would be, it is my favorite series as well, but I contend that Deep Space Nine is actually a better TV show, The Next Generation is my favorite Star Trek series. So think about that. Let that settle in.
Yeah, we might have to come back to that. That's a loaded statement. Yeah.
Well, I'll say why, right? Because I think that while The Next Generation... clearly revitalized the whole franchise and has some fantastic episodes of television and some fantastic characters. Picard, Riker, Data, everybody on The Next Generation. I don't think there are any characters that particularly annoy me. Every once in a while, maybe Wesley Crusher annoys me, but that is, you know, just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, yeah.
But Deep Space Nine came at this time when... the idea that you could have a story arc told over multiple episodes and even multiple seasons became in vogue. And so they could tell very complicated stories. And that happened kind of halfway through Deep Space Nine's tenure, because Deep Space Nine and Next Generation were on at the same time for a time. I think they overlapped. And so the Next Generation really didn't have that kind of overarching storyline. It was very episodic, which is, I think, part of, especially for someone who hosts a show in which we take random episodes of Star Trek, that episodic nature of The Next Generation is a boon for me, because I don't get into a situation where sometimes with a Deep Space Nine episode that gets picked, it may be the third episode in an 8-episode arc.
Yeah.
Which makes it difficult to talk about in isolation. But that's strength, that weakness for me in my peculiar setup is actually a strength, I think, in the show, because you can watch this very elaborate kind of operatic story and really get a sense of the characters and have them have some growth, which is something that I don't think we really got a lot of in The Next Generation. I think the movies showed a lot of character growth, especially for Picard, but the show, people are kind of in stasis.
Actually, I would completely agree with that. You're totally right. It was something that struck me a little while ago once I started going back. I think they showed up on streaming on Netflix and I started watching them again, and that hit me too. Like this lack of, I mean, the stories were interesting. I still kind of enjoy them, but there's not a whole lot tying each episode together. They're sort of sandboxed, kind of.
Yes.
I mean, the only arc, you know, off the top of my head from the Next Generation is like the Borg, you know, but it doesn't really develop so much as they're just like a major recurring threat.
Right. And I guess you could say that Q is kind of has an arc maybe, but not really. He just shows up and annoys everybody. Mm. But we remember him, right? Because it's like, oh, it's Q. You came here before, much like the Borg. Oh, it's the Borg. We have to fix them.
Yeah.
And some of the best episodes of Star Trek, The Next Generation, involve the Borg. And depending on your feelings on Q, I know some people find him super annoying. Some people find him very entertaining. I'm in the entertaining camp, so I enjoy a lot of the Q episodes.
Oh, yeah. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
I loved him.
A lot of people don't like Q, but I like him a lot. One of my favorite episodes is, Mortal Q, I think, when he loses his powers and he becomes just another dude on the ship. Or I don't even know what the name is. I'm awful with the titles of shows, but...
Yeah, he was a red shirt, now that I think about it, wasn't he?
When he had his powers, he would dress himself up as a red shirt, but a captain, obviously. I don't remember what he was wearing when he was immortal. He may have been. He was helping Geordi try to figure out a moon had slipped out of its orbit and was going to destroy a planet. And he came up with a solution, which, of course, was just change the gravitational constant of the universe and you'll be fine.
Those doggone moons.
Yeah, they're always slipping out of their orbits, causing no end of trouble. Well, let's talk about, we've covered Deep Space Nine, The Next Generation. We haven't really touched on the series that started it all and the series from which we're watching this episode, Mirror Mirror, the original series. So what are your, you said you watched it kind of when you were too young to really get it. But now that you're old enough, you've matured into being able to possibly appreciate the original series. What do you think about it?
I love it. I mean, especially when you look at the history and the context of the show of when it was out and all the incredible things that the groundbreaking things that Roddenberry did with it. Uhura, Chekhov.
Sulu.
Sulu as well. It's fantastic. It suffers from the same problem as The Next Generation, and the writing was kind of the same way at the time. Every episode is kind of a sandbox. There's not a whole lot of arcs that I remember.
No.
But it's an entertaining show. They were doing crazy stuff at the time. It's a legend. I think it's a staple.
That's true, and it's interesting for me. And I, every time we talk about an original series episode, I talk about this because... So this is a 50-year-old TV show. And you watch it, and the story, Mirror Mirror, seems fresh. And I can imagine any other science fiction show doing something similar to this storyline. I'm not sure if it was a super original idea when they did it even back then, kind of the parallel universe where there are evil counterparts. But it's done so well. I feel like this episode of Star Trek spawned a lot of pop culture stuff because it was kind of a seminal Star Trek episode and a seminal science fiction idea, especially, oddly enough, the goatee to denote your evil twin.
is that my first or my second note here? Yes, in parallel dimensions, ships apparently travel in opposite directions of one you were watching.
Yes.
And your second in command has a mustache.
That's right. That's how you could tell.
Yeah.
If you're evil, if Spock is evil or not, if he has facial hair or not. Facial hair, evil Spock. No facial hair, good Spock.
So slight aside, do we need to lay out like the groundwork for the episode to make sure everybody's on the page, like what this episode is?
Well, that is a good point, David. I think we probably should. So I'll do a very quick, and I'll be surprised if people who are listening to this aren't familiar with Mirror Mirror. But if you're not, here it is in a nutshell. Kirk, McCoy, Uhura and Scotty are down at a planet. They're trying to get some dilithium crystals from this very peaceful race who apparently their council meets on a dais in the middle of a field. It was very strange. But anyway, so they're like, give us your dilithium crystals. They're like, no, the Federation, while peaceful, may kill someone in the future, and that would go against our history of peace, which is interesting. But there's an ion storm happening, so Kirk is like, oh my god, let's get off this planet while this ion storm is happening, because I don't know why. So they beam up, but oh no, there's a transporter malfunction. Kirk and his party get transported into an alternate universe, whereas his counterparts in the alternate universe get transported into, I'll just call it our universe. And so they're transposed, and the big thing here is that in the alternate universe, the Federation does not exist. the Terran Empire exists, it's evil, and they want to crush everybody, and the ship is slightly, I think Kirk says, the ship is slightly different physically, and the crew, he says something about, like, crew obedience is served through physical harm, or something like that, and they've got all kinds of weird stuff. And everybody's evil, and there's assassinations to get up and down through the ranks. And Sulu has a scar. Spock has a goatee. It's craziness there.
Scars and goatees are the dead giveaway.
Yeah, it's no good. That's when you know you're in alternate reality. And Kirk seems to put this together very quickly. The rest of McCoy, Scotty, and Uhura seem to have a little tough time with this idea. I'm not quite sure why. Also, Uhura, you can tell her costume, her uniform, which there's not much of it, it changes radically. And you can, as I was watching this with my wife, we both noticed and commented on Uhura's very well-developed stomach muscles. So if I look like that, I would wear that outfit all the time because, good lord, she is in fine physical shape. So kudos to you, Michelle Nichols. Nichelle Nichols, I think. So that's the, like, the broad strokes of the episode. And this is kind of one of the most famous episodes of Star Trek, I believe. And it starts a whole series of other episodes of Star Trek that both Enterprise and Deep Space Nine dip into this Mirror Mirror Universe, which is actually never called the Mirror Mirror Universe in official Star Trek canon, but that's what everybody calls it. So there's two episodes of Enterprise that take place in the Mirror Mirror episode, Mirror Mirror Universe, which are actually very good, so I suggest you watch those. And there's like maybe five or six Deep Space Nine episodes that happen in the Mirror Universe that are informed by the end of this very episode, Mirror Mirror. So we can talk about that too.
So my first question is, like, as far as the setup goes, in these two different universes, how would the ship be at the same planet for what seems to be the same reason at the same time?
It's just one of those kooky happenstances. They need the dilithium crystals. The Hulkens, I think is the name, have dilithium crystals apparently everywhere, and they don't use them, and they don't give them to anybody because they decide... It's strange. I think that the Federation has killed people in the past, so that should just say, okay, no, you can't have these crystals because, you know, you have weapons on your ships. But their excuse is, well, we know the Federation is nice now, but in the future, you may kill people, so we don't want to give you these dilithium crystals. And I'm like, Captain Kirk has killed a lot of people.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird setup because, you know, at first he says you have to absolutely prove that you are peaceful and will forever be peaceful. And then there's another line or two of dialogue in this negotiation before they start beaming up and have the accident. And then a little bit later, the Hulkan negotiator, president, I don't think they went over exactly who or what he is, says the future is always uncertain.
It's true.
So it seemed like a little bit of a contradiction. Like, you have to prove that you will be peaceful throughout the end of time, but the future was never be written and will never be certain. So I don't know. It seemed like a little bit of a conflict of their belief system.
I think they just want to keep the crystals for themselves.
But I found myself, you know, as we were talking about these, the original series and Next Generation not having like a lot of story arcs and whatnot, but I found myself immediately wondering, like, kind of curious about why they needed the dilithium crystals. Like, what's going on? Why is this so important? Is there a shortage in the Federation? Is there something going wrong? Is this like a resource race? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, I think that the Enterprise is on this very kind of deep space mission. So they are far from, and this is what Erica Ensign calls headcanon. So things I make up to make the story make sense. So they're far from any kind of Federation outpost, and I'm assuming they're dilithium crystals. They recrystallize them so many times they need a new source of them. And so they come across this planet that is rich in dilithium crystals, and they're like, hey, give us your dilithium crystals. Or, you know, not give them to us. We'll give you something. I don't know what they were going to give them in return, but But sadly, the Hulkens are having none of it.
That's got to be a little bit of a downer when, like, the only gas station you can find, you know, way out in the middle of nowhere is like, nah, we're not hooking you up with anything.
I agree that you haven't killed anyone in the past, but you cannot guarantee that you won't kill someone in the future, so no gasoline for you. And it wouldn't be a great way to run a gas station either. You wouldn't make much money, I don't think. Although the Hulkins seem very nice. They wear a little, I think, were they wearing togas? I believe they were wearing togas. And they have little dots on their foreheads, so they're all happy.
Yeah, so you know that they're aliens.
That's right. They're,
yeah, they're kind of wearing togas. I don't remember the toga rules, but as to whether they can be colored. But yeah, I'm looking at the screenshot here, and we've got some orange, we've got some kind of maroon, maybe a deep brown.
Yes, and I think so. Another season two episode is "Who Mourns for Adonis," in which the crew come across this planet where Greco-Roman gods seem to exist. And I believe they probably just used some of those props over for this episode.
Or maybe they all just shop at the same place.
That's true. Like, what do I know about future space outfits?
Yeah, I mean, gods and aliens, maybe they're just being frugal.
It's true. And the Hulkins won't sell their dilithium crystals, so they're probably low in cash. So they got to take what they can get.
So this is a good economic lesson for the kids, right? That's if you're right. Not doing trade... you're not bringing in money, and you know, you're gonna have to shop at the discount toga store.
That's right. If you want, just let that be a lesson to you kids. If you don't want to, if you don't look good in a toga, start getting a business degree or something. Speaking of togas and looking good, they beam up during this storm, right? And they're transposed into this universe, and they're evil counterparts. We'll say evil. I know that's a judgment, but I think it's pretty apt. Are transported into the normal universe. One of my quibbles with it is somehow the people are swapped, but the uniforms are not. Right?
Yeah, so, right. Right.
So they get beamed into Captain Kirk. Evil Captain Kirk is beamed into good Captain Kirk's uniform, and good Captain Kirk is beamed into evil Captain Kirk's uniform.
maybe it's like a Terminator thing, you know, where like the ion storm is only swapping organic matter.
Oh.
But if we're going down this road, this also means that good Captain Kirk was beamed into bad Captain Kirk's underwear.
Well, I mean, assuming any Captain Kirk wears underwear, and I think that may be too much of an assumption.
You know, that's about all I got for, you know, to try and explain that.
I do. My whole point in bringing this up, other than, you know, wondering about Captain Kirk's underwear, is that I really like the uniforms that the Mirror Mirror Captain Kirk and crew wear, with the little gold sashes, and they're much more militaristic, right? They have little medallions and medals, and I don't know what they mean, but they look cool. And they all have daggers, because why not?
Sure, you know, just to set the right first impression.
That's right. You never know. As Uhura finds out, you never know when you'll need a dagger.
I mean, I'm glad you brought it up, because I do like their uniforms. The strangeness of Uhura's uniform, because, I mean, let's face it, that's not really a standard ship uniform.
No.
Like, you know. That's not for beaming down. That's not for going into battle, as unfortunate as that might be. Overall, though, I did like the design of those. You're right. They just, I don't know. They just looked a little, I don't know. They had that, what's the phrase? That je ne sais quoi?
I don't know what. Yes. And I enjoy, you know, it's the 60s. So, of course, they put some fringe on Captain Kirk's shoulders for no apparent reason. I enjoyed it. And apparently they had lots of gold lame laying around, so everybody gets a gold lame belt. Although some people didn't, and I couldn't quite understand. Maybe just officers get a gold lame belt, and other people just get regular belts. I couldn't really understand if there was any significance there. But
or in this universe, you have to kill someone.
That's true. You kill someone, like in Highlander, you kill them, and then you take over their belt. Which is exactly what happens in Highlander. Look it up. So the Mirror Mirror universe is a little more rough and tumble than our, you know, tried and true Star Trek universe. You know, Captain Kirk gets into a lot of fights, but at his heart, he's an explorer, and he gives lip service to diplomacy in a lot of situations, but at least he tries, before he punches someone, to talk them out of it. He's no Captain Picard, right? Captain Picard will hardly ever punch anybody, but Captain Kirk likes to get a little roughhousing.
Right, but that actually gets him into trouble, right? Because the first thing he does is go back to the bridge, and Spock is like, you know, Captain, orders are that, you know, we're supposed to knock these guys, we're supposed to teach them a lesson and, like, blow up one of their cities or something to get them to play ball. And Kirk is like, let's give them a little more time, like, say, 12 hours. And that kind of freaks everybody out, right?
Yes, everybody's like, what?
Yeah, like, that's not what's in the orders. Like, this doesn't seem right.
This seems odd, Captain Kirk. And I do love one of the things about this episode is, so Captain Kirk and McCoy and Scotty and Uhura are trying to, you know, infiltrate the crew and, you know, play it cool and figure out a way to get back to their universe because they very quickly ascertain that they're in some kind of parallel universe. And we spend, I would say, 95% of the episode in the Mirror Mirror universe on the other Enterprise. But back in the, our, you know, quote unquote normal Enterprise, Spock, it seemingly takes Spock like 2 seconds to figure out that, these people that are on the transporter pad are not the Kirk, Uhura, McCoy, and Scotty he knows, and that they are clearly from an alternate universe, and he has them thrown in the brig.
So, hold on, are you saying that that's proper universe Spock is somehow like better or smarter than the alternate universe Spock because he figures it out faster? Is that what you're trying to lay down here?
Well, it seems to me that yes. I mean, evil Spock, evil Spock doesn't seem to pick up. He figures it out eventually, but based on what we see of evil Kirk, he's like a raving lunatic when we see him, and good Kirk is not a raving lunatic on the Enterprise. So you would, on the alternate Enterprise. So you would think they would pick up a little quicker. They're like, hey, Captain Kirk isn't killing anybody and he's not blowing up this planet. Maybe there's something wrong with him. It takes them a
while. I'm actually glad you brought this up because I'm pretty sure the scene you're talking about is the only time we see normal universe at all, right? And we only see Kirk.
Mm-hmm. We see everybody. They throw them all in. Kirk is the only one who talks, but we see in the background Uhura, McCoy, and Scotty also looking like raving lunatics.
That's right. They're already in the brig, and they throw Kirk in with them. Mm-hmm. I was actually a little bummed. I wanted to see a little more of that. Like, you know, surely they probably tried an escape attempt. They probably threw a few punches. I don't know. I wish they would have spent a little more time on that, like just another shot or two.
Yeah, you'd think that they could have some fun with having Captain William Shatner play a little bit more with being, you know, crazy evil Captain Kirk, because he tries to, he's like, Spock, what do you want? Do you want money, credits, power? I can give you everything. And Spock is like, fascinating, and walks away. Because Spock,
I kind of want to see like evil Uhura and McCoy and Scotty too. That'd be fun.
Yeah, they don't get to be evil at all, really, except in the background and look angry because they're in the brig, but that's it. William Shatner just gets to play and nobody else does. I don't know. I agree with you. I think that's a missed opportunity. But I guess they thought the more interesting story was the characters we know and love trying to figure out what to do, and let, Spock, Sulu, and Chekhov be evil.
Speaking of Chekhov.
Oh, Chekhov.
So what was the next thing? Kirk lays down the law. Everybody gets a little spooked about the whole flower thing. Mm-hmm. And then he says, I'm going to go, you know, take a nap in my in my room. So he leaves the bridge. And then Chekhov is in the lift with him, gets out. And doesn't he spring his assassination attempt?
He does. And this is where we find out, much like on a Klingon ship, the path to promotion in the Terran Empire is not through being particularly good at your job, but by assassinating higher ups, and then everybody moves up to fill the void.
Well, hold on for a second. I mean, in order to assassinate someone, you would technically have to be good at doing that. So,
well, that's true.
You know, I mean, I know this is kind of a gruesome angle here, but you would have to be a good assassin. So,
and that's
at least
how
you're good at something.
That's how evil Captain Kirk became captain of the Enterprise. He assassinated Captain Pike, and he became.
Oh,
captain.
That's right.
As we find out when Captain Kirk wants to go through his counterpart's service record, and he finds out A, he killed Captain Pike, and B, his second act was like to blow up some planet, and then he killed 500 colonists, and then, or 5,000 colonists actually, and then Captain Kirk's like, well, maybe that's enough of my service record. This is awkward. But yes, so Chekhov, in the first but not only assassination attempt we see in this episode, springs his trap, and it is quickly foiled. Because I guess people like Captain Kirk, evil Captain Kirk, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And this is why we learn that they have they have some kind of a torture device on the ship, and they only call it like the box or something, right?
Yes, the agony booth.
Oh yeah, okay. That's
they a have, more descriptive. They have two non-standard, well, for our normal universe Enterprise pieces of equipment. They have the agonizers, which apparently everybody carries, and they've got the agony booths. Now, why you need two devices to agonize people, I don't know, but...
Well, no, actually, I'm glad you bring this up. If we can rewind very briefly at the very start of when the good crew shows up in this evil universe, mm-hmm. the transporter room officer did something wrong. He mixed something up or whatever, and Spock decides to punish him for it. And he says, "Give me your agonizer." And he's like, no, I really don't want to be agonized. And Spock's like, "No, really." And so he pulls like this little, I don't know, it kind of looks like an oversized communicator from the Next Generation. He pulls that off his belt, and Spock takes it and like holds it up to his shoulder, the transporter officer's shoulder, and just like shocks him for a few seconds. So apparently in this universe, you have to carry around your own tools of your own torture.
Well, that's how sick and twisted they are, right? They make you carry the one thing that will be used to punish you your entire time there. So you always know it's right there at your hip, a constant reminder that you should do the best at your job, because otherwise it's the agonizer for you.
That is brutal.
It's not a great place to work, I don't think. I think I prefer the other Enterprise, frankly, than this Enterprise. And plus, if the agonizer isn't enough, if you do something egregious enough like try to kill the captain but fail, then you're sent off to the agony booth, which doesn't...
Actually, hold on. Now that we're piecing this all together, the only reason apparently you get thrown in the agony booth is because you failed.
Exactly.
Right? If you kill your superior, you get the job, apparently. Like, yep. Hooray to you. But if you fail, you get punished.
That's
for failing.
You have to roll the dice if you want to succeed, just like in this universe. Ooh. Although there are less agony booths here, thankfully. Although that's an interesting scene, because Captain Kirk, they thwart the assassination attempt. Spoiler alert, Captain Kirk doesn't die. And one of the, you know, Chekhov's buddies turns sides midway through the fight because he notices that Captain Kirk is winning, and he's like, well, why would I be on the losing side when I could be on the winning side? Makes sense. And he says, Captain Kirk turns to him, this random crew member, and he says, well, Chekhov promised me like a chief position, but you could make me an officer. And Captain Kirk is like, yes, I could. You could even be captain. And then he pauses for a second, and then he punches the guy and says, but not on my ship. And I thought, this is a little bit of evil Captain Kirk shining through good Captain Kirk. He's getting a little too into his role.
You got to play the part. You know, like he already did something to make people suspicious. So it's like, you got to throw a punch and, you know, lay somebody out to make him think you're still the evil guy.
It's true. And I admire the way that Captain Kirk is throwing himself into this role, and one of the security officers is they pick up the unconscious Chekhov, and they're like, should we take him to the booth? And Captain Kirk, you see him hesitate for a second, and he's like, yes, take him to the booth. And he has no idea what this booth is, but he's like, yeah, sure, do it.
Yeah, it could have been like a photo booth, you know, like, let's take some pictures of this dumbass who just failed at killing me.
That's right. We'll put some wacky sunglasses on, and he'll be so embarrassed when we put it in the newsletter. He'll never live this down. But no, it's the agony booth, and we see it later when Spock and Kirk, I forget where they're going, they just walk past it, and Spock is like, oh, look, it's the agony booth, and Chekhov's in there screaming, which reminded me of Star Trek II when Chekhov once again is screaming because he has that weird little eel put into his ear by Khan. Not many good things happen to Chekhov. Sorry, Chekhov. And yeah, Captain Kirk is surprised, and he's like, oh, I didn't really know that that's what the booth was. And I think Spock asks him, well, should we kill him? Should we keep him there for 24 hours, something like that? And Captain Kirk says yes to Spock, but then later he goes back and says, let Chekhov out.
Which was, you know, the other tip-off to Spock that something ain't right.
Exactly. Spock is slowly but surely piecing things together in this episode. And then there's this other thing where, so apparently in the Mirror Mirror universe, the captain gets to pick his, basically a concubine, I suppose. It's a captain's woman, quote unquote. And so he goes, Captain Kirk goes to his quarters, and lo and behold, there's a lovely lady there waiting for him, whose name I don't remember.
Marlena, I believe.
Something like that. And so she basically, she plays an important role in that she explains to the audience how evil Captain Kirk had rose through the ranks so quickly because he apparently got his hands on some kind of alien technology that lets him spy on anyone and I guess erase them from existence by pressing a button. It's unclear how this button works, but if you press a button, the person you're watching dies.
Yeah, they just disappear.
Yes.
Like it seems like there's nothing left.
They may not die. They may be teleported somewhere. I don't know. But they are gone from wherever their current position is, off to unknown worlds.
That's right. And she mentions, like, she asks a question, something like, how many enemies have you dispatched? Hundreds or thousands? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty evil.
It is pretty evil. And this is where Captain Kirk, once again, so she, Marlena, or whatever her name is, she's the smartest person on the Enterprise because she is immediately... like, there's something weird with you, Captain Kirk. You are not acting like the Captain Kirk we all kind of hate. Because he kisses her and he says nice things to her and he isn't mean. She says something about, you know, I'm so embarrassed to be on the Enterprise now. You need to transfer me and I will get up to a position of power even if I have to sleep my way through every officer in Starfleet. To which Captain Kirk responds, oh, she doesn't say Starfleet, in the fleet or wherever she says. To which Captain Kirk says, I believe you could do it. And then she's angry. And then he's like, no, I don't mean that. I mean, I believe that you can do whatever you set your mind to. And then she's like,
And then we see the little star that says, the more you know.
That's right. Do. Yeah. So there are a lot of interesting differences. One of the things that amused me most is that the computer's voice is male in the Mirror Mirror universe, which is, you know, makes it kind of sound a little more menacing than the soothing tones of the Enterprise that we know and love.
I feel like it could have sounded meaner, though.
It sounds like a dude.
it it's a male voice, but it's kind of aloof, like the female computer in the normal universe. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it could have been a meaner computer, you know, like a little more direct with its statements, with like a slight edge of being annoyed that you asked it to do something.
Well, I guess they don't want a sassy computer, right? They want one that's subservient but masculine for some reason. So they don't want it to sass them in any way. And then so I guess the subplot, not really a subplot, is they need to figure out how to get home. And so Scotty and McCoy and Uhura are all off busy trying to figure out how to get home while Kirk is busy, you know, covering their tracks, I guess, and kissing his captain's woman and not killing people with this button in his room. And so Spock figures out what's going on. Evil Spock, I should say.
That's right, actually. She, when Marlena opens the machine, she actually tried killing Spock. Like, she was about to do it, and Kirk had to stop her.
Yes, Kirk doesn't want to kill Spock.
Yeah.
It is unclear why. Well, I mean, because it's clear why. It's like his best friend, even though he's wearing a goatee and he's evil. It's still his best friend. And in defense of evil Spock, he is probably the least evil person that we meet. Like, you know, Chekhov and Sulu's counterparts in Mirror Mirror Universe are pretty awful.
Yeah, they are.
They both try to kill Captain Kirk. So.
Yeah, that's right. So just to kind of skip ahead, how are we doing on time?
We have 10 minutes.
So, yeah, just to skip ahead a little, the other three, McCoy, Scotty, and Uhura, they've figured out that they can do something with the transporters and kind of recreate the situation that caused the ion storm in the first place and sort of, you know, to reverse the effects, but they have to do some stuff in engineering in order to, you know, make the changes. Some people kind of start catching on to what they're doing. But, you know, they kind of get stuff set up and then they all gather in, what do you call McCoy's place?
Sick bay.
There we go.
That's why I'm the host.
and that's when Sulu springs it on him.
Yes.
Right.
So it's interesting. There are two kind of deadlines they have, right? So they have this, the membrane between the universes, they don't call it that, is, strengthening. So they need to get they need to transport within like 15 minutes or something, or else they'll be stuck forever. And Spock has instructions from headquarters to kill Captain Kirk at sunrise if he does not destroy the planet or destroy one of the cities or whatever. And so they have these dueling timelines of they need to get off the ship before Spock kills him, and they also need to get off the ship before they can't get off the ship, right? And so Sulu, not really knowing this, bursts in. And this is – actually, Spock bursts in first, and there's a big fight.
Right.
Spock gets knocked out, and somehow he gets knocked out very badly because Dr. McCoy is like, if we leave him and run to the transporter room, evil Spock will die.
So that's right. They had a flower pot in sick bay, and Uhura hands it to Kirk, and he cracks Spock with it, and that takes out the Vulcan.
That takes out the Vulcan, and apparently is going to kill him if they leave him there. So McCoy, being a doctor, cannot do that. So he says, "Let's get him on the table." Scotty's like, "Ah, we need to go. Let's just leave him." And McCoy's like, "It'll take a minute," even though they argue for longer than a minute about whether or not to do it.
Right.
I was like, just do it and stop talking about it and you can go to the transporter room. And while they're doing this, this is when Sulu comes in. And Sulu is like, hey, I heard word on the street is that Spock has orders to kill you, Captain Kirk. And Captain is sadly for you, he is going to succeed. Sadly for evil Spock, he's also going to die in the altercation. Great news for evil Sulu, I will become captain. and then another scuffle. Actually, no scuffle ensues because we've got, what's her name, Marlena, dials up on the old Death Vision 3000 in Captain Kirk's office, is watching, and slowly picks off all the non-named characters in the room.
Right. So Sulu has like three guys with him. She picks off those three guys, three pushes of the button, poof, they disappear, but she doesn't pick off Sulu.
Which is weird, right?
Does the Deathstroke 3000, whatever you called it, only have power for three people? She have like a soft spot for Sulu?
She might like Sulu.
You know,
he's kind of dashing, especially with that scar. It makes him exotic.
So, of course, there's a little bit of a – well, there's not much of a fight.
No.
Kirk kind of positions himself behind a table. Sulu takes one jab at him. Kirk hits the hand, like basically judo chops Sulu, and Sulu's out.
Yes.
So not much to talk about there. And then
for evil Sulu.
Yeah. But the team worked everything out, right? So they head over to the transporter room.
And an important note, they save – Dr. McCoy saves evil Spock. And they leave him there in sick bay. And they run off to the transporter. And it turns out evil Spock has worked out what they're going to do and has locked out some kind of transporter thing. So while they can transport, they can't set it to do it itself. So it's like your VCR, David. They couldn't set it to start itself. You had to actually press the button. And so the problem with that, you say, well, what's the problem? There are four of them. And all four of them can't be on the pad, and one of, press the button. Someone has to stay behind and press the button. Although this is very quickly undercut.
Right? It's just real quickly like, oh, so I'll stay behind. No, Captain, you stay behind. No, I'll stay behind. That whole thing.
Yeah, and then Captain Picard does not appear in this episode. Captain Kirk says, Scotty, I'm ordering you to get on the transporter pad. And so Scotty's like, okay. And everybody else gets on.
One rank.
Yeah, that's true. And then I guess Marlena shows up and she's like, take me with you. And they're like, no, we can't for no particular reason. And then in comes evil Spock. And he's like, I figured out your plan all along. But I don't really want to keep you here. I want my other captain back because he was easier to manipulate, basically. And then this is the point at which good Captain Kirk, he can't resist, right? He can't. Anytime he encounters a civilization that he disagrees with, he has to make it clear the problems with their civilization and how it should change. So
he can't resist breaking the Prime Directive, is what you're also talking about.
It's true. He can't stop himself. It's just what Jim Kirk does. He beams down. He says, your society's stupid. I'm going to destroy it. And then he leaves.
So many words.
That's what he does here. He says, hey, Spock. This empire of yours is illogical. It's awful. Revolutions start with one man and a good idea, and that one man should be you. Peace out. I'm going back to the Enterprise, the good Enterprise. And Spock is like, evil Spock is like, you've given me much to think about.
Yep. Yep. All it takes is an idea.
That's right. And then
But I actually have a question about this moment. So I think because I rewatched this. I watched this Saturday and then I rewatched it today while I was working just to make sure it was fresh. And Spock says something about like, you know, I want to get our crew back and you really should go back to where you came from. But I don't think he said anything specifically about like, you know, I want my Kirk back because he's, you know, easy to manipulate or whatever. But I think that's actually why. Like, yeah, I think it's like
he doesn't say it. I feel like it's implied.
Yeah, like he wants his Kirk back because, you know, then he can kind of he doesn't want to be captain. He can keep being a science officer and he gets to be logical. You know, so he's not doing it like because it's the thing to do, I guess is my point. He's doing it because like he wants to get his Kirk back and then everything will be fine because he can keep manipulating everybody.
And the one scene that we see with the evil Kirk from this universe, it is clear that that Kirk is not super bright because he doesn't realize he's not on his Enterprise and this is not his Spock.
Yeah, that's a good call.
He's trying to bribe him and he's like, what are you people doing to me? I'm the captain. So he doesn't quite get the nuance that he's in another universe.
And that kind of takes me back though to the idea of like it would have been fun to see a little more of what they'd try to do. Like maybe the bad crew figures out, you know, eventually, and so they try to like manipulate their way, you know, through Starfleet and the Federation and, you know, or something. I don't know.
Well, that would have been interesting, but they did not do it.
You know, speaking of alternate universes and all that. They do the beaming thing and all is apparently well.
Apparently, I mean, even though in the other universe they seem not to beam the bad guys back, they swap places somehow, and all is back to normal. We get, what's her face? Marlena shows up and it turns out she's a lieutenant and she wants Captain Kirk to sign something because paperwork is very important in the 24th century. and so he does. And then Captain Spock is like, do you know her? And Captain Kirk's like, I don't know her, but I feel like we could be friends.
Yeah, Kirk.
And yeah. There's a little funny exchange where Captain Kirk says that he felt like Spock fit too well in the other universe, and that made him think, you know, question Spock's motives. And Spock is like, well, I had the chance to observe your counterparts, and they were awful homicidal maniacs, pillars of Homo sapiens. And the best part is that Captain Kirk is like, I think we've been insulted. I'm not sure, but I think we've been insulted. And McCoy says, I'm sure. It just cracked me up.
That was McCoy and Spock's relationship. If I had to pick a relationship in the old show, that's my favorite right there. Just those two always going at each other, or really like more like McCoy going at Spock all the time.
Yes. Spock gets his digs in as well, but they're more subtle than McCoy is.
Yeah. He takes the high road.
So overall, what did you think of Mirror Mirror?
It's good. I mean, I liked it. You know, aside from the, you know, obvious, like, technical, like, how does that work? Why is that possible? This doesn't make sense stuff, which was, you know, kind of prevalent in the show, because that's not the point. I think it was a fun episode. It's one that I remember seeing, you know, growing up. But yeah, I liked it.
Excellent. And this is it has kicked off. It's the basis for many other fun episodes of Star Trek, so check out the Enterprise episodes. There are two, I think, in the fourth season that are set in the Mirror Mirror universe, and they're great. And they feature a different theme song, so that's even better than the normal Enterprise shows. And Deep Space Nine, all of those Mirror Mirror episodes are set after this Mirror Mirror episode, and so we see the implications of what Kirk has said to Evil Spock. So Evil Spock does, in fact, follow his advice and rises to become like the head of the Terran Empire, but he demilitarizes the Empire, and it is left as an easy prey for the Klingon Cardassian Empire in that universe, and so humans become slaves, and it's all crazy. So just watch those Deep Space Nine episodes.
Well, there we go. Now I got it planned out. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome, and thank you, David, for being on. Next on Random Trek, Voyager, Season 6, Episode 25, The Haunting of Deck 12. Ooh.